Idaho Matters now as we start with our medical expert, since it is Wednesday, talking about the coronavirus pandemic. So if you have a question for our doctors, email us at idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Joining us today, Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force, Dr. Rob Cavanaugh, St. Luke's Executive Medical Director, and Dr. Darren Lee, Vice President of Medical Affairs and an Emergency Department Physician at St. Alphonsus Medical Center in Nampa. Thank you all for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Gemma.
Hi, Gemma.
Well, and as we know, on Monday, people 65 and older could start getting the COVID-19 vaccine here in Idaho. However, we'll go back briefly to 8 a.m. on Monday morning when a massive number of people tried to sign up online with St. Luke's for a vaccine shot.
About 100,000 people tried to schedule via my chart this morning here at St. Luke's.
And that is Scott Milner with St. Luke's Pharmacy. Now, the system was overwhelmed, especially since over the weekend, St. Alphonsus had to cancel a lot of their vaccine appointments for this week due to a lack of vaccines. So as you can imagine, we heard from so many frustrated people. And since we cannot tell all of their stories, what we wanted to do was highlight 66-year-old Christina Benson from Boise, because she is a retired teacher. She had breast cancer last year. She has another health complication, and she has been really isolated during the pandemic. She did everything right. She went on my chart through St. Luke's, which told her to call her doctor. She spent 2 hours on the phone. She was told to go back to my chart. As you can imagine, her frustration level about trying to get this vaccine was so high because she wants to see her family again.
Today, I just sat in my room and cried for a while, because you try to do what you're supposed to. You try to mask. You try to be careful. You try to be careful with your family. And I felt like it was insult added to injury today to go through the hassle of being sent around and around and around in circles. I'm just going to continue watching and try off and on several times a day until I can get an appointment, because otherwise I'm in isolation until I can have the vaccine.
So we're curious about what happened. And we should point out again that Christina is just one of the dozens of frustrated people that we heard who contacted Idaho Matters. So Dr. Cavanaugh, I want to start with you, because I am assuming that you were expecting a crush of people to try to call and get an appointment or get onto my chart. So were you ready for this amount of people?
Thanks, Gemma. First, I'd say we're thrilled that number of people are interested in getting the vaccine. So I think we should say that's a good thing, that there are that number of folks, you know, who desire to receive it. You know, it did overwhelm our system. It overwhelmed our website. It overwhelmed our phones. And so we got our IT folks on that right away and got things rectified throughout the day. You know, the thing that we want to just stress to folks is, you know, this is not really a limitation on our end, being able to deliver the vaccine. We're getting the vaccine out almost as soon as we get it, and it's really a supply issue. And if we could get more, we would give out more, but we're opening appointments as we get vaccine, and so we're giving it out pretty much as soon as we get it.
And Dr. Lee, why did St. Alphonsus have to cancel certain appointments this week in some of your areas, including Nampa? I know folks could still get them in Boise.
Yeah, so the short answer is we just didn't get the number of vaccines that we were expecting. And it is a frustrating problem over the last, especially the last couple of weeks that we've opened up, the state has opened up the number of people that can get the vaccine. And it's also important to remember is, you know, every state does it a little bit differently. So we're actually ahead of, say, Oregon in opening up to 65 and older. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to move things through quicker. But because of that, it also means that our supply is not always what we expect it to be. When that's what happened this last week, is our supply of our Moderna vaccine did not come in at the levels that we expected. And so we were not able to hold those clinics. And it's a day-to-day battle in figuring out when we're going to get the vaccine and then trying to operationalize that into appointments for people to come in and get not just one, but two vaccines.
So Dr. Pate, can we talk a little bit more about that? Because I do want to make it clear that I don't believe that and correct me if I'm wrong, that the fault lies at the hands of these medical centers or frankly, even the health districts. I mean, we're getting vaccine in the state of Idaho from the federal government, and we are bottom on the list of the amount of vaccine that we are getting. And on top of that, we have something like more than 100,000 doses sitting somewhere that have not gotten into people's arms in the state of Idaho. So do we have any idea as to why this is happening? And also, how is there a way to ensure that we do get more vaccines since we do have such an influx of people that want to be vaccinated?
Yeah, Gemma, this has been a very frustrating problem for everyone. And I, my heart aches for that woman's message that you played at the beginning. I can only just imagine how frustrating it is. And so there's so many factors. I mean, the first thing is, although there are things to compliment Operation Warp Speed about that they deserve praise, this was also a terrible logistical failure. There was a missed opportunity to buy more vaccine earlier. There was very little communication to the state. Dr. Lee was mentioning St. Alphonsus expecting a certain amount of vaccine to arrive, and then it didn't arrive. And so they had to cancel appointments. And, that is a real difficult problem for our entire state and all the healthcare providers, because generally we get very short notice about what amount of vaccine we're getting. And then it can turn out that it's actually less. And there's not a whole lot of transparency about, okay, why is Idaho receiving less vaccine per capita than some of the other states? What other factors are being taken into consideration? The governor raised the possibility they may be using an outdated set of numbers. We don't know. Now, the good news is that the Biden administration has pledged to increase the amount of vaccine that's coming. They did just purchase, I think it was like $300 million doses of additional vaccine. So things are going to get better. But this is a very frustrating process right now. I agree with Dr. Kavanaugh, Dr. Lee. The healthcare providers are trying to do the best they can. And I think we all need to understand the reason that states don't have the infrastructure to do this is that we as a society have decided not to invest a whole lot in public health. Our health systems are not public health organizations. They do contribute to the public health, but they are generally acute care and chronic care providers. And so there's just so many pieces here that have been not well planned out. I am encouraged that now the Biden administration is going to plan this out better, increase the vaccine, and be more transparent. In fact, I think instead of a week's notice, now we are being told that pretty soon we're going to get 3 weeks notice of how much vaccine we're getting, so that providers can better prepare, and so that they don't have to cancel a bunch of appointments when we don't get as much vaccine as we hoped.
And with that about the cancellations, we did get an email from Mac from Parma. He and his wife were scheduled for the vaccination at St. Alphonsus on Sunday, February 7th. They were part of that mass cancellation. So his question is St. Alphonsus going to make some effort to proactively get them rescheduled, or do they have to fend for themselves to get a new appointment? Dr. Lee, do you know at St. Alphonsus how that will work? And I am sure, as Dr. Pate said, that 3-week notice will make a tremendous difference.
Yeah, so we're still trying to figure out how to do that. But the short answer is right now there is not a great way of getting those people that were already scheduled advance notice to schedule ahead of time. So unfortunately, the answer is to continue to check the website and the 188 number that we have on our website to try to get that scheduled. As soon as we have it in hand, we will be able to release more appointments.
Dr. Lee, Gertrude sent us this question. She says, the vaccine signup seemed to rely on a person having a relationship with a physician or a medical center. What about those who do not have that relationship?
So I'm aware that some people through their primary doctors have been able to or are trying to get signed up in that direction. But at St. Alphonsus, I can only speak to really how we do it there. We don't have there's not a relationship that has to be established before anyone can sign up who qualifies under the state designation through the website. So it doesn't matter if you already have a primary doctor that's not a St. Alphonsus doctor or you have no primary doctor, you can still sign up.
And then Dr. Pate, Max just sent us this. He says, being over 65, I was able to sign up for a vaccine shot at the end of March. I suspect vaccine availability will increase. Does that mean providers would move appointments up? Is there a requirement for them to do that?
Well, I agree with him that I do think the vaccine supply is going to increase. I think we're going to get more Pfizer and Moderna, but I also think in that period of time, at least one more vaccine is likely to be approved for emergency use, and that will add significantly to the distribution. So I do think the supply is going to increase. I also think that there are going to be more vaccine providers. Initially, you know, it was a little bit limited because it's very difficult to just handle these vaccines with the requirements. This next vaccine that's likely to get approved, much easier, more like our typical vaccines. And we may see many more vaccine sites open and providers that are willing to give this. Also, President Biden announced that next week, vaccine will be started to be delivered to pharmacies so that they can administer it to the public. So that will increase availability. Obviously, if he gets his first shot in March, when he needs a second shot is not going to change based on this. But I do think we're going to get more vaccine.
And then Dr. Kavanaugh, Cheryl wrote this. She said, I had a Moderna vaccine last night. Within 20 minutes, I experienced tingling in my lips and my tongue. I was given 25 milligrams of Benadryl. Symptoms reduced in about 30 minutes. When I got home, I took an additional 25 milligrams. But this morning, my tongue is prickly and the tip is red. Does this eliminate me from the second dose?
No, it doesn't. I think it's important when she goes in for the second dose to make sure that she communicates that to the team there. We have folks stick around after their immunization to make sure that they're not having a severe reaction. We've had a very low number of people have a reaction like that requires treatment. But it's important that she lets the team know that when she comes in for her second dose.
And then, Dr. Kavanaugh, I want to add on to that because John sent this in saying that I've heard that the second dose of the vaccine causes more discomfort and pain. Is this true? And if so, why does the second shot pack a bigger punch?
Yeah, if you think about it, you've already got some immune reaction to the first vaccine that you received. So the second one, your body's primed. The reason for the booster is to create lasting immunity. And so, yes, that is true that you can expect a little bit more arm soreness. Some people are reporting fevers, chills. It's typically self-limited. It goes away within a day. I think people should just prepare themselves. Some physicians are recommending taking some Advil or ibuprofen after receiving that second dose. But yes, we are seeing a little bit increased in side effects.
And then Dr. Lee, Andrew just sent this in and he said he's scheduled for his second dose of Moderna vaccine at St. Alphonsus next week. So with the current shortage of vaccine, is there a chance that he will not receive his second dose when he's scheduled?
I don't believe so. We have already allotted those for second doses. So those who have already received their first dose should be able to receive their second dose. And that's already been scheduled.
Okay. Dr. Pate, I want to get to this question because Denise wrote in and she says, I read a health and welfare Facebook post yesterday that said that people who have had both vaccine doses do not need to quarantine after travel or after exposure to someone with COVID. Is there actual science behind this? This seems confusing since we still don't know if a fully vaccinated person can have an asymptomatic case. So the question of whether a person can transmit COVID after being fully vaccinated is very important, where some people in the household will get the vaccine earlier than others.
Yeah, it's a great question and obviously shows that she understands a lot of what's going on. The answer is yes, there is science behind the fact that it's not necessary for people that have received both doses of the vaccine and are at least a week out from the second dose to quarantine if they're exposed. Now, the reason for that is because currently we have two vaccines that are extremely effective at preventing disease. She's very right to point out the unanswered question of, even though they might be protected from getting infected or getting severe disease, could they possibly carry the virus in their nose or throat and transmit it to others? That remains unanswered. I think we'll have answers later this year. So let me just be clear. No need to quarantine, but there is still a need to use all the other precautions. In other words, that person still needs to wear a mask when they're out and around other people. That person still needs to physically distance. That person still needs to wash their hands. That person still needs to stay home if they're sick. All of those things, because she's right, that we don't know that they can't transmit the virus, but we're not really worried about that person getting infected, and there's no need to quarantine at this point. That might change as the variants become more prevalent, but that is the current advice.
So just to reiterate, though, is that at this point, there's not enough science to back up if someone who is fully vaccinated can give this to someone else. Because she's right when she says there are some people in households where, depending upon someone's job or their age, they might get a vaccine before everyone else in their house does.
Well, and that's right. And so you still need to take precautions to protect other people, and that's why we say, even if you're vaccinated, you do need to wear a mask. Now, most people aren't going to do that in their own households, and certainly they can transmit the virus within their families. So certainly you want, if you know you've been exposed, even though you've been vaccinated, you want to take that into account with what your activities are with people that are in the home you live with. But as a general rule, there's no need for a formal quarantine.
Okay. Dr. Kavanaugh, Philip from Boise sent us this story, and man, I'm hoping this isn't true. But he says, I'm going to read it in entirety. My wife recently went to Walgreens as they were closing in the hopes that she may be able to receive a vaccine dose, an excess vaccine dose. Long story short, she was told that we throw them away with regard to excess doses that day. If just 50 outlets waste one dose per day, that's 1,500 doses being wasted every month. How many doses of vaccine are being wasted? Or do we even know that?
Well, I can speak for what we're doing at St. Luke's, and that is that we go to extreme lengths not to waste a single dose. We go around and gather up people to make sure that we've used every dose that we've prepared. You know, sometimes there are people who, for whatever reason, can't show up for their appointment, or something happens and they're not able to make it. So we do everything in our power to make sure that we're giving out those doses. We are not we're not throwing away any doses at the end of the day.
Dr. Lee, what about St. Alphonsus? I'm assuming you are taking similar measures as St. Luke's.
Yeah, so I mean, as you know, these, you have to prepare a certain number, and you'd have a certain shelf life once you prepare them. So you prepare for the number of people that are supposed to be there. And of course, sometimes people don't show up. And so then we will try to contact people, we'll make phone calls, we'll go within the hospital to people who may not have gotten vaccinated yet. So we make every effort to not waste any doses, try not to thaw out any more than we think that we will need. You know, anytime you're dealing with something like this, you know, the story of, you know, systematically throwing things away, I think it is not true. There may be times when you're not able to fill those. I know at least us at St. Alphonsus, we have the ability to go within the hospital if we're given at the hospital within the clinic, and we can find people usually to fill those holes. It might be harder, I can imagine, if you're at Walgreens and you don't have that, you know, large group of population to be able to give the extra doses to.
And Dr. Lee, once you do open a vial, how long does the vaccine stay viable?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't remember exactly. I think it's somewhere around 6 hours, and I think might have been changed recently.
Dr. Lee, we're getting a lot of questions in right now in regards to when people get their second dose. Apparently, some folks are being scheduled about 19 to 20 days out from their first dose. And the questions are, is that enough time between doses?
So I think if you look at the, you know, the Moderna and the Pfizer are different. So the Pfizer, I think, is about 20 days, and the Moderna maybe a week longer than that. So, and that's how they were studied. And that was based on the studies, the most effective time to give the booster. So, you know, I got my second dose and I did have a little bit of a fever and some chills. And so I think it was working.
Good. And that's what we want to hear, right? Dr. Yes. Pate, can we talk a little bit, and I know we touched on this last week, but a little bit more about these new variants that we're seeing and the efficacy of the current vaccines that we have. And I ask this because, you know, every news report that I have read or seen talks about, well, these vaccines will have less efficacy. With that said, can we be clear on the fact that they will still be effective? Because I think wording really matters. And when we say less effective, I think we need to talk about just how highly effective these vaccines are, if that makes sense.
Well, it does, Jemma. You always make sense.
Well, talk to my husband about that. He'll tell you no.
So, yeah, let's just try to clarify this. So, let's look at our first two vaccines, Pfizer and Moderna. What we were hoping for before we knew the results of the study is, could we get vaccines that would be 60% effective? That's what we were hoping for. This was beyond our wildest hopes. They came in at roughly 95% effective. Now, let's talk about what that means. What that means is we're just looking at, okay, of the people that got the vaccine, how many COVID cases occurred in that group after they got their vaccine? And then the people that got the placebo or didn't get the vaccine, how many cases of COVID did they get? And then we compare them. And what we saw as a kind of an oversimplification is that basically the vaccine group got 95% less infections. Now, that's not the end of the story. That doesn't mean that the 5% it wasn't quote unquote effective, they didn't get any benefit. In fact, they did. What was really encouraging is that even if you still got COVID after you got the vaccine, what tended to happen is you didn't get severe disease. You didn't end up in the hospital and you didn't die. Whereas that did happen in the placebo groups that did not get the vaccine. So even when even a 95% effective vaccine, which is just amazing, and we should be extremely grateful, that doesn't mean that it doesn't benefit everybody. It does. Now, let's talk about the variants. The first, and we don't know what the effectiveness is against any of the variants mm-hmm. because we haven't studied that in real life, but we have studied it in the test tube. And so that may or may not be wholly true once we see how it plays out in real people. But in the test tube, what we can tell you is that right now, with the UK variant, which is our first variant of concern that is of pressing concern because it's spreading so much in the United States, it looks like the effectiveness is going to be only a hair less. It really looks like we're going to have great protection against that variant. Where we start to get a little bit more concerned is with the South African variant, with the Brazilian variant. We don't really know a lot about the Denmark variant yet, but with the South African variant, it does appear that the vaccines are less effective. That doesn't mean they're not beneficial. And understand that our Moderna and Pfizer trials were going on before the South African or Brazilian variants emerged. So they weren't really studied in that context. And that's why we don't know the answer to that. However, some of the vaccines that are in the pipeline and that I was mentioning, I think they're going to get approval some, they were tested in those populations. And so we do know. So for example, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, where it's about 72% effective in preventing moderate to severe disease in the U.S., which is fantastic, that drops to 57% in South Africa. Mm. However, even that 57, which let me just remind you, what we were hoping for before we got spoiled with these great vaccines, we were hoping for 60. So 57's not far off from that. So this vaccine probably still would have been approved even at that rate. But what the important news about that is, even though people could still get sick with the South African one, nobody got sick enough they needed to go in the hospital. So at this point in time, while we do believe there is less protection for some of these variants that we haven't really dealt with too much yet, but we know they've entered the United States, while it's still more likely you might get COVID from them, what it appears is if you do, and because you've gotten the vaccine, you won't get severe disease. And that's what we really, at the end of the day, care about. We don't want people to end up really sick in the hospital and die.
And Dr. Pate, while you were giving that response, we had a listener email us wanting to know. They said, I think the vaccine trial didn't track asymptomatic cases. How does that factor into the efficacy of the vaccines?
Yeah, so it's different for all these trials, how they did this. Some of them did test, people randomly, even if they didn't have symptoms. So we would have picked that up. But also understand none of these trials were designed to as an endpoint to try to avoid asymptomatic infections, because what we're really trying to do, as I mentioned just a little bit earlier, is we're trying to prevent people from getting really sick and ending up in the hospital. Mm-hmm. So we do believe that it will reduce asymptomatic infections, but we don't have that data yet. I think we'll get more of an understanding of that with time. But the good news is these vaccines appear to be really, really good at protecting you from getting really sick or dying.
Dr. Kavanaugh, Margaret sent us this email on Sunday because she was looking at the New York Times coronavirus tracker, and it showed on Sunday that since January 1st, one in 11 people in Idaho have had COVID and one in 1,035 people have died. She says this is shocking, which if accurate means it's quite possible that all of us in our state have been or will be in contact with someone who is or was infected. Can you please talk about this? Because she says, I have not heard about these statistics before.
Yeah, so hard to know, you know, how many people from Idaho have been in contact with someone who's been infected. We only can track, you know, positive tests. And so that's what we can feel confident in. I would say that we can also be confident in that the mitigation efforts that we have in place are working. We're seeing cases going down, and we haven't vaccinated a significant portion of the population. So it seems that masking and social distancing and hand washing, avoiding large crowds, that's working. So even if we have been exposed to people who are positive, we're doing a good job in avoiding contracting the virus by being careful.
And Dr. Lee, John in Boise wants to know if we have any more data on people's reactions to the vaccines. As you said, just with your own experience, that you had a bit of a reaction with that second dose. And, you know, some people have a reaction, some people don't. So are we keeping data on that?
Yeah, that data is kept through a database for all vaccines. All vaccines have a database, whether it's the MMR vaccine or flu vaccine. When there's a serious reaction, it's reported through that. And we've had, just in sort of looking at the local population, you know, I work in the emergency department. So if somebody gets really sick from this, that's where they end up. And it's a very, very rare occurrence. And maybe even at just a handful of people. A lot of people will sometimes mistake an adverse reaction to an allergic reaction. So sometimes people will get some swelling at the site. Sometimes people will get what we talked about, which is sort of not really an adverse reaction. It's actually the reaction where you get fever and you get chills and you get body aches, and some people get, you know, diarrhea, abdominal pain. I mean, there's a variety of symptoms that can go along with your body responding to this vaccine. And in a way, that's good. And you've often heard people say, oh, you know, I got the flu from the flu vaccine, which is not possible since it's not a live virus. But you do get symptoms that resemble the disease, and that's your body responding to that disease. So while the adverse events and the allergic reactions that are very severe, they do happen. And, you know, you can imagine if we're trying to vaccinate, you know, 360 million people in the United States, there's definitely going to be a number of people that have a reaction. It's still extremely low and in line, if not lower, than it is with any of the other vaccines that we give out currently.
So Dr. Pate, Penelope is writing in and she says, I work with a man who says he does a tremendous amount of research and, quote, knows the mRNA vaccine alters our DNA, unquote. She says, I am sure I have heard and read that this is not how it works. Can you help me with a fairly simple rebuttal to this?
Yes. So he's doing his research in the wrong places because that's not true. Here's the simple explanation. All of our genetic information is contained in DNA. And it's in all of our cells. And this is how we leave our identity with the crime things and all. Everybody has DNA. It's in our cells. But what happens is it provides the genetic information, but it has to be transcribed. And so basically what happens is the RNA, it writes down what the DNA is telling it when it needs to make a particular protein. And so it writes that down. Now, sometimes the RNA will have a mistake, but just the matter of copying, or what we call transcribing the DNA, does not alter the DNA at all. And that RNA that carries the transcribed instructions for making the protein, it goes from the nucleus of the cell where the DNA is out into the out part, the outside part of the cell where proteins are made. And so it just gives the instructions for how to make a protein. With this vaccine, what we're doing is we're not even messing with that part of the transcription of the DNA. We've already got it in the messenger RNA that's in the vaccine. So what happens is they inject the vaccine. It has the messenger RNA that's already going to give the message to the cell about how to make the spike protein on the coronavirus. And so it causes our own cells to make that spike protein, which that can't infect you because that's not the whole virus. That's just a part of it. But it's what is enough to cause your body to make an immune reaction to it. But this does not alter your DNA. And the mRNA, the messenger RNA, is very short-lived. It's very fragile. And that's why we've talked about how difficult it is to manage those vaccines, because it's very fragile. It doesn't stick around long, but it gives that message.
So Penelope, just tell him that his research is in the wrong place and it doesn't work. Long story short. But I thank all of you for coming in, for continuing to keep us updated, for the work that you are doing. So many frustrated people this week. So I hope that our medical experts cleared some of that up for us as we continue, thank goodness, to get people vaccinated. Thank you, all three of you, for coming in today.
Thanks, Gemma.
Thanks, Gemma.
Thanks, Gemma.
We've been talking with Dr. David Pate, Dr. Rob Cavanaugh, and Dr. Darren Lee. Of course, we will have our medical experts hopefully back next week. We may be preempted by impeachment trials, but get your questions into us, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. I'm Gemma Gaudette. It's Wednesday. I hope you have a good rest of your day, and we'll see you back here tomorrow.